Hi, my name is Eliane Goldstein, and you're listening to The Effect on Us.
Every survivor had one moment, you want to call it luck, you can call it luck, or you can call it divine intervention.
If my mother's family hadn't been saved by Stanislav Grochulski, who put his life and his wife's life and his children's life at risk in order to save them, I would not be sitting here and talking to you right now.
It's up to life and death. You feel to fight for survival.
The Effect on Us podcast. Here's Eliane Goldstein.
The Effect on Us is a podcast for people of all ages to learn about controversial subjects and the ties it has to people nowadays. In this season, the focus of the series is the Holocaust. You'll be able to hear some of the best survival stories I've ever heard from people that went through the Second World War and learn more about the effect the Holocaust had on people from Generation 1 to Generation 3. Did you know that during World War II, some individuals and groups of people helped Jews and others escape from the Holocaust conducted by Nazi Germany? Some well-known examples include Oskar Schindler and Irina Sandler. In this episode, I'm talking to Cheryl Silver Ohayon, who had a Harvard Law degree but has since decided to join Yad Vashem. She's going to talk to us about Righteous Among the Nations and what it is and who qualifies.
What is your name?
My name is Cheryl Ohayon, Cheryl Silver Ohayon.
Where were you born?
I was born in Brooklyn, New York.
What is your connection to the Holocaust?
Well, my connection to the Holocaust is, first of all, that I am a guide in the Yad Vashem Holocaust History Museum. And I have been working at Yad Vashem since 2005. In a few different capacities. Right now, I am the project director for a program called Echoes and Reflections, which is a program that teaches American teachers, American educators, how to teach about the Holocaust with confidence.
Why did you join Yad Vashem?
That's a very interesting question. I think I joined Yad Vashem because I felt a connection to the Holocaust, and I felt that it was a very, very important topic to deal with. I mean, I am a lawyer by training, and I worked as a lawyer for almost 30 years, and I didn't have the satisfaction that I get working at Yad Vashem.
I saw someone that you have a doctorate from Harvard University, right?
Right.
So why did you become a lawyer and then switch?
Okay. So I became a lawyer because that was kind of the thing to do. I don't know how to explain it. I was taking a lot of liberal arts in college. I'm a person who's much more verbal than I am technical or mathematical. And so I became a lawyer. I went to Harvard, had a wonderful time there, thought it was fascinating, met a lot of interesting people, a lot of interesting professors. But I think I liked the theory of it a lot better than the practice, because I did work in it for almost 30 years. And let's see, when Yad Vashem opened the new Holocaust History Museum in 2005, I was very intrigued, and I went and I took a course to guide in the museum. And very quickly, I just kind of got sucked in body and soul, because it was much more gratifying to me and much more, I felt a real connection to the topic, and I just felt that it was very important. And so that's why I switched. It just sucked me in a little bit at a time. One day, then it was 2 days a week, then it was 3 days a week, and then it became my whole career.
Many of the people that I interviewed were talking about Righteous Among the Nations. What does that mean exactly?
So, okay. The Righteous Among the Nations, that is a designation that's conferred by Yad Vashem on people who basically are not Jewish, but took very great risks to save Jews or to try and save Jews during the Holocaust. And there are criteria for this. And I think one of the most amazing things about the Righteous program is that it was written into the charter of Yad Vashem. Yad Vashem was created by the Israeli government 1953. And if you think about it, that's only 8 years after World War II ended, right? And it's only 5 years after the War of Independence, where Israel was created. And even that early, Israel was thinking that there had to be some way to honor these people who, in these very, very dark times, they were willing and ready to sacrifice their lives, sometimes the lives of their families, to stand up for these Jewish people who were being persecuted and tormented and murdered left and right. And they had the moral courage to do that in a very, very dark time.
Do you have an estimate of how many people exactly are in the Righteous Among the Nations?
I can give you an exact number. I can give you an exact number actually as of January 1st, 2020, because that's the last time it was all counted. 27,712 individuals and people have been given the designation Righteous Among the Nations through January of 2020. And the question that I always ask is that a big number or a little number? And it really, you know, it really depends on your perspective. It's a huge number when you consider that these people basically were ready to sacrifice their lives. And it's a tiny number when you consider that there were hundreds of millions of people living in Europe at the time.
Are there still people today that are trying to get people to be in Yad Vashem's list?
Absolutely. There are still, Yad Vashem still gets requests all the time to confer the award, the designation on people. It's getting a little bit harder because one of the criteria that you need to be designated Righteous Among the Nations is that you need for the survivor or the survivors to come forward or to have witnesses so that it's not just the person who could possibly be given the award. There has to be witnesses and it has to be substantiated. And that's, I think, getting harder and harder as we move further and further away from the events.
What are some of the criteria that you need to have or to have done or to not have done to be able to be put in the list?
Okay, so the criteria are, first of all, you must not be Jewish. And that confuses a lot of people because there are people like, for instance, Sir Nicholas Winton, who saved a lot of Jewish children from Czechoslovakia, I think over 600 Jewish children. Mm. He is not considered righteous because he was actually Jewish himself. So first of all, this is an award for people who are not Jewish. You must have tried to help or save a Jew. You must have put your life at risk. And this is also sometimes a stumbling block because there are places in the world, for instance, in North Africa, where there were people who saved Jews, but they weren't awarded the designation Righteous Among the Nations because their lives weren't at risk. So that's another one of the criteria. A third criteria is that you did this without any getting anything in return for it, which means not just money. It can also be things like sometimes there were people who saved babies or saved children because they didn't have any children themselves. And they were hoping that by the end of the war, they would be able to keep that child or baptize that child and keep it as their own. That is not, you know, that would take away the designation righteous. So again, so the first three criteria are they're non-Jews, who risk their lives, put their lives at risk in order to save Jews or try to help to save Jews. And they did it without getting anything for themselves from a purely altruistic point of view. And then the fourth criteria is that there has to be evidence.
Before you said that you can't be a Jew, is there anything equivalent for people that were Jewish that saved other Jews?
So that's a great question. Not from Yad Vashem, but I believe that Bnei Brith has an award for Jews who saved Jews. Yad Vashem doesn't have that. That's not one of our responsibilities, one of the things that we do according to our charter.
Do you have any relatives that are Holocaust survivors?
I do indeed. My mother's entire family.
Is anti-Semitism something that is scary for you?
Yeah, it is very scary for me. It's very scary because I see that the same types of tropes that have been used against the Jews for 2,000 years are still very viable today and still being used. For instance, during COVID, there was a lot of talk about the Jews profiting from COVID, profiting from the vaccine. And that's a trope that goes all the way back to the beginning of Christianity. So that's over 2,000 years ago, where Jews were said to only care about money. And the whole issue of was Jesus betrayed for 30 pieces of silver, and all kinds of things like that. Yes, it's very much a concern, especially because, you know, these days anti-Semitism has kind of mutated into something that we call being anti-Israel, where Israel is kind of the stand-in for Jews as a whole, and so all of that hatred is directed against Israel. And I think that's a very dangerous situation. Yes.
Do you live in Israel right now?
I do, in fact, live in Israel right now. I'm talking to you from right outside Jerusalem.
Do you know anything about women couriers?
That's funny. How did you get to that question?
I saw an interview on YouTube and you were in it and you were talking about.
Yes. That's one of my favorite subjects in the whole world, the couriers. But that's a whole different story, because that's not an issue of saving. That's an issue of resisting. And it's a wonderful story about women, and mostly young girls and young women in their 20s, their teens and their 20s. So more your age than my age, that's for sure, who stood up against the Nazis and basically were, carried out all kinds of incredible acts of resistance, smuggled guns into ghettos. They were the backbone of armed resistance during the Holocaust in the ghettos. Without them, armed resistance never could have happened.
Is there anything that you find interesting specifically about the women couriers that you wouldn't mind sharing?
I think I find everything about the women couriers very interesting, because these were women who were so brave and really just didn't think about the danger, or just did what they had to do despite the danger. In a lot of ways, I mean, they have that in common with the righteous among the nations, because the righteous were willing to take these huge risks to their own lives, sometimes the lives of their families. They're just larger than life for me, as far as I'm concerned. And the fact that they were just, often teenagers, I'm incredulous. I am absolutely in awe of these women, and what they tried to do, how they got away with it. The fact that they were so good at camouflaging themselves and being actresses all the time, because that's what they had to be. But that's a whole nother subject.
Can you please tell me your favorite Righteous Among the Nations story?
My favorite Righteous Among the Nations story is a very small one. And it's a story about two families who, in the summer of 1942, when all of the Jews in their area were being rounded up, and they knew that they were going to have to show up at the train station, these two families decided to run away and hide in the fields. And the problem was, okay, it's two sets of parents, and they had seven children between them, three in one family and four in the other. The problem was that in the fields, it started to get cold. You know, it gets cold in Poland very early. And so by the middle of the fall, it was getting very, very cold. And they knocked on the door of a peasant's house, somebody that they knew, a man named Stanislav Grochulski. That was his name. They knocked on his door and they told him, "We need help." And he said, "Look, I can't help you because I have four daughters and they're really little. And I don't want to put them in jeopardy, because, you know, in Poland, if you were found hiding a Jew or helping a Jew, that meant that you got the death penalty. Not only were the Jews killed, but also the people who were helping them were killed." And everybody knew that in Poland because the Germans advertised it, right? So you know, the first couple of times that they knocked on his door, he told them that he couldn't help them because he was very afraid for his family. And then at a certain point, he decided, when it was starting to get really cold, he decided, okay, if they really need this help, I will take them up into my attic and I will keep them here. And he told them, I'm going to keep you here just for the winter, just while it's cold, just while you don't have any food and, you know, you're having a hard time outside, because if I don't help, he understood that the especially the babies, because there were two babies in this group of seven children, the babies would die. And so they went up to his attic, and there were 11 of them. And then it turned out that they had four brothers who were still wandering around in the forest and the woods, and he brought them up also. So there were 15 people in his attic. And the winter that he told them he would keep them for turned out to be 2 years. And for those 2 years, every day he brought them up a pail of food, and every day he took down a pail of waste because there was no bathroom in the attic. And his children weren't allowed to go up to play in the attic. And his wife was so nervous about the situation with 15 Jews in her attic that she got pregnant at least once and had a miscarriage. Two of those two babies didn't make it. And also one of the other adults didn't make it. But in July of 1944, when the area was liberated by the Russians, 12 of those 15 people came out of the attic alive. And why is this my favorite Righteous Among the Nations story? I was able to go to the ceremony where Stanislav Grochulski was granted the award Righteous Among the Nations. And the reason why I went, and the reason why I like this little tiny story so much, is because, remember I told you that there were seven children? My mother was one of those seven children. And so, if my mother's family hadn't been saved by Stanislav Grochulski, who put his life and his wife's life and his children's life at risk in order to save them, I would not be sitting here and talking to you right now. That's for sure.
Wow. Are you still in touch with them?
I am. As a matter of fact, his great-grandson sent me a Facebook message yesterday to make sure that with all of the rockets that are coming down on Israel right now, to make sure that I'm okay, which was very sweet of him. Yes, we are still in touch. And I think we will always be in touch because we owe a lot to this family. It's unbelievable that they saved us and that they were such amazing people.
Thank you very much for talking to me today. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Wow, 27,712 Righteous Among the Nations. That number seems like so little, but really is a lot. The Talmud, which is the Jewish scripture, says that whoever saves a single life is considered to have saved the whole world. And we are grateful for every single one of those people. Thank you for joining me. Please tune in next time when I will hear about Chiune Sugihara, who is a Japanese diplomat during the Second World War, who defied instructions from Tokyo and issued thousands of transit visas to Jews fleeing Nazi persecution in World War II. If you like this episode, please like and subscribe and share this podcast with your friends. This is Eliane Goldstein. Tune in next time to The Effect on Us. And remember, history will not repeat itself. Bye!